It's pretty good. There's no spoilers at all in this message if you haven't seen it yet. So let's just take a moment to offer up a prayer. Spirit, we know you're here with us, and we ask that you be in our thoughts, in our minds, and to help us hear the word that we need from you. Amen. One of the really fun things about preaching is that you have to make connections between things you never thought you could make connections between. Parasite, Lent, Gibbimish Kadamon. I don't know if I'm missing something, but we're going to go on a wild ride in this sermon and make some connections that we hadn't thought of before. I want to start by talking about one morning a few weeks ago. I had to go out and drop one of my kids at an early morning sport practice, which meant that the other two were left home alone for a little bit. I left a checklist, as I normally do, of morning chores. You've got to make breakfast, pack lunch, pick up the dirty clothes off your bedroom floor. I got back home from the sport practice, and I was expecting to walk into a pleasantly humming kitchen. Maybe someone even took it upon themselves to unload the dishwasher, I thought. But here's what I saw when I burst through the back door. First, the checklist with absolutely nothing on it checked off. And second, one of the kids who'd been left home alone, computer open and watching videos on YouTube. Do you know how many people there were on the planet when I was your age? I launched, and I didn't wait for an answer. 5.5 billion, I said. And do you know how many people are here now? Almost 8 billion, I said. Do you realize, I said to this poor child, that when you're an adult, you are going to be competing against 2 billion more people than I had to for everything. And the people who make it to university, the people who get a job, the people who find apartments to rent, they're the people who don't watch YouTube before breakfast. Who is with me here? We're taught that it's a competitive world, that it's a world of finite resources. If the good life is a pie, you could say there's only so much to go around. That's the story we tell ourselves. This is the world of our life text this week, the text that holds up a mirror to part of our human condition. This is the world of Bong Joon-ho's film, Parasite, a competitive world where an opening for a job as a security guard attracts 500 university graduates. That's what one character says at one point in the film. The good life is a pie that only so many people can get a piece of, and the Kim family is trying to connive a way of getting even a few crumbs. Mom, Dad, their 2 adult children live in a semi-basement apartment in a crowded neighborhood in Seoul. They might have had a seat at the table at one point. In one of the shots, there's a framed photo of the mom, who we understand used to be an elite athlete. But for whatever reason, the family has fallen on hard times. And when we meet them, they're trying to make a few bucks folding pizza boxes for a pizza delivery company. Their prospects turn when Ki-woo, the adult son, is offered a gig covering his friend's tutoring job while the friend goes abroad for the summer. Now, Ki-woo isn't technically qualified, but the friend assures him that he can fake it. It's a great opportunity, the friend says. This family is rich. And so begins the Kim family's invasion, their parasitic invasion of the Park family's home. Ki-woo gets his sister a job with the family as an art teacher, and the two siblings then concoct a plan to oust the Park family's chauffeur and housekeeper and con the Park family into hiring their mom and dad as replacements. So what if it means the original chauffeur and housekeeper are now out of work and destitute? It's a competitive world. Sometimes getting a piece of the pie means you have to take it from someone else like a parasite. And the film shows the rich Park family to be just as parasitic. They live above the noise and the fray of daily life only because they're buoyed, boosted, supported by a host of domestic workers whose energy feeds their lifestyle. The film holds a mirror up to the way of our world, to the deep competitiveness that seems entrenched in us as humans. Our propensity to greediness and anxiety fueled by the sense that there's only so much to go around. It's an old story. Canada's very inception, as we know, was founded on a parasitic relationship. Europeans, unhappy with the size of their pieces of pie, invaded, insinuated themselves here to live off land and resources that had been under the stewardship of indigenous peoples. I once had a professor in a history class ask why the Europeans first set out to find lands new to them. What were they looking for? He asked. Spices? Someone offered up. And this professor just laughed. You think someone would get on a ship to who knows where, to face possible starvation and deprivation and months at sea for a trade route to new spices? No. The Europeans who set out were looking for gold, a chance at the good life. They wanted to get rich, to get a bigger piece of pie when they'd exhausted the resources on their own land. They set out to see if they could find some to take from somewhere else. Parasites. Underneath the drive to compete and to clamor is a very real emotion. Fear. What if we don't have enough for ourselves? What if we run out? We tell ourselves stories. You've got to compete. Clamor. Elbow your way in. Take what you can get. It can be hard to imagine an alternative narrative to hoarding and stockpiling, to looking out for number one. The writer Joan Didion said, "We tell ourselves stories in order to live." Yes, but our spiritual traditions remind us that there's more than one story. Our spiritual traditions question whether the stories we've been telling ourselves really lead to life. What if we follow a different narrative? I remember sitting with my dad after failing badly at piano when I was in grade 6 or 7. I hadn't practiced enough. I wouldn't be ready to take the exam. That's what the teacher told me. A small incident in the grand scheme of things. But I remember feeling big emotions. I'm no good. That's the story I was telling myself. Why do I even bother? I don't have it in me to be anything other than what I am. I'm a failure. My dad had found this poem, brought it to me in my room, sat on the end of the bed. It was called If. And that's how it began, with a single solitary conjunction, a powerful interjection. I wasn't receptive to listening to my dad at the time, but I see now what he was doing with hindsight. It was spiritual, expanding my story, interjecting with more details, helping me to start a new conversation with myself. That's what Lent does. As a season of the church, we take the narrative the world gives us about our possibilities and potential as human beings, and we bring them into this sanctuary. And the stories of our faith tradition offer up an interjection, expand the conversation, help us to see our humanity with fresh perspective. The stories of our faith ask us to wonder, yes, but what if? Consider Lent the season when we encounter a kind of a hand extended to us across a chasm, an invitation to a new way. This morning, the stories of Lent invite us to walk down a path that may need clearing in our lives if it's been overgrown and underused. Instead of going in the direction we always go, instead of being propelled by fear, competitiveness, clamoring, what if, these stories ask, we took a risk and set out in a new direction? Every week in the season of Lent, we're invited to consider a challenging and transforming virtue as an alternative storyline. Last week it was trust, and this week it's risk. Remember the story we often tell at Lent of Jesus going off into the wilderness and being tempted by Satan, a name that literally means adversary. The adversary preys on Jesus' very real and human fear. Am I enough? Do I have enough? Will I survive? You're a talented guy, the adversary said. You should lean into that. You could make millions. The adversary took Jesus to a very high mountain, showed him all the kingdoms of the world and their splendor. All this I will give you, the adversary says, the whole pie. If you bow down and worship me, that is, if you feed your fear. But somewhere deep in Jesus is another voice, and it's full of interjections. But what if? Take a risk. I look at the character we heard about in the story of Genesis, Abram, and I see someone absolutely paralyzed by fear. He's had his heart broken, don't you know? I picture him just sitting there. See if he wants to commit to anything again, to get attached to a person or a place, if he might have his heart rebroken. We didn't read this part of his story, but just before the short passage we read from Genesis, we learn that Abram's brother Haran has died. And there's more. Abram and his wife Sarai have also discovered that they're not able to have children. Why bother? Abraham might have been thinking, why hope? when your hopes can be dashed, life will inevitably disappoint, he might have been thinking. Abram knew what it was to be afraid. When you've experienced loss, you know in your bones that nothing in life is certain. Nothing can be counted on. It's scary. And you want to hold on to what you have. And then, yet, from somewhere equally deep and profound, another voice, "What if?" Now the Lord said to Abram, "Go from your country and your kindred to the land that I will show you." A voice said, "It's in you to step forward into a new direction, to leave fear and anxiety and walk into a new land. I'll show you the way," God's Spirit says. Reaching a hand out across a chasm, "Will you take this risk?" We heard a snippet of Nicodemus's story, a Pharisee, a lot like Mr. Park, I think, the wealthy man from Parasite. Everything depends for Nicodemus on his ability to maintain his standing in the world, to be set apart from others, to stay above the fray. But he comes to Jesus in the middle of the night. Why, do you think? I think he's searching. He's tired of being afraid. It wears a person out. Always worrying, the constant clamoring. "Can anyone be born after having grown old?" he asks. "Can one enter a second time into the mother's womb and be born? Is there more to our human story?" Well, our sacred texts say yes. Can you hear it? The voice that calls, can you feel it? The divine spirit, it's all around. The wind blows where it chooses, Jesus says, and you hear the sound of it, but you do not know where it comes from or where it goes. Perhaps you think you're immune to it. And yet, haven't you felt it? The tug at the heart? The sudden thought out of nowhere? The moment of courage? What would you call these? Accept a hand across a chasm, go from your country, your kindred, your old habits and patterns to a land that I will show you, Spirit says. Take a risk. I wonder how many of you, did you watch the Gibby Mishkadiman video that we linked to in the Keeping in Touch? It's an amazing video. If you haven't seen it, go back to our email, click on the link. These young people, we've been meeting them. Don't you think their experience on the paddling canoe together canoe trip is like Abram's story? Is a story like Nicodemus's? Here are a group of young people, indigenous and non-indigenous, all that historical baggage, who took a risk, who are taking risks, who are following the Spirit's invitation into a new land, so to speak, into new ways of being human together, moving beyond our propensity for fear and competitiveness and clamoring. "I was a little nervous because I was afraid of what would happen on the trip," one participant said. "It's fun opening up to people, but sometimes it's a little hard," said another. Well, yeah. When we go in a different direction from the way we've always gone, when we walk into a new story, it's hard to trust that we'll be okay, but that's the Spirit's promise. Go from your country and your kindred to the land that I will show you. Take a risk, and I will bless you, Spirit says. Take a risk, and you will be a blessing. I know our culture makes it seem like our competitive and clamoring condition is fixed, that there's simply not enough to go around for all 7.5 billion of us on the planet. But today, let's hear the Spirit's interjection. She's alive and well and working in the world, a hand reaching across a chasm. And now, how about you? Will you come and follow me? Spirit asks. If I but call your name, what if we accepted the invitation and took a risk? I want to leave you with this final image. And if this doesn't make you want to go back and watch the Gibby video, I don't think anything will.
One, go! You got it!
Oh, it's good.
Hang on, Steven, it's not working. Okay. I need your help. Technology right at this moment. Hang on. This is going to be worth the wait, people. Can you help me? Okay. Just hang on. Let me just... This is not exiting from the screen. Sorry. Can you try and get that stuff down? Oh, there we go. Okay. Okay. Okay, here we go. Taking a risk 101.
Three, two, one, go!
Let's stand and sing together. Will you come and follow me? We're going to sing 1, 2, 4, and 5.